My guest on Australia Overnight right now is Steph Woolard, is the Chief Executive Officer and founder of a group called Seven Women. Good morning, Steph. How are you today?
Morning. I'm great, thanks.
That's good. Steph, very quickly, we're going to talk about tourism and the overcrowding of the world right now. But before we go there, I'm so interested to know about the group that you're the founder and CEO of called Seven Women. How did it come about?
So I was actually travelling over there after high school, 19, and leading groups of architects through Duke of Ed when I was 22. And on the back of one of those trips, I met seven disabled women just by chance that were living in a tin shed when I was walking down the back streets of Kathmandu, and heard about their stories. To be disabled in Nepal means that you were evil in a past life, so they were very stigmatised. And I had a bit of money left. I had about $200 Australian, and we decided to pay for two trainers to train them in skills to make products so that I could sell them back in Australia. So 12 years later, that's kind of grown into a manufacturing business. And I've been importing them here and selling them. It employs over 1,000 women. But probably about 6 years in, we thought, how can we make the most of the tourism market in Nepal, 13% of GDP? So we thought we'd start cooking classes, which would also generate a local income for the women. So we've got a cooking school now, and we have groups, different tour groups that visit us every day to do cooking classes. And now we've also got a hotel, so that trains disabled and marginalised women up in hospitality skills, really linking into the tourism market and enabling tourists also to kind of travel and make an impact.
How absolutely fantastic. Congratulations on that, Steph, and well done with Seven Women, and may it continue to have great success. Maybe at the end of our conversation, we can talk about how people can support the group. But right now, we're going to talk about the overcrowding of the world. So many people these days are on the move, travelling. And of course, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, it was pretty expensive to get on a plane or a boat and go somewhere. These days, it's as cheap as ships to get from point A to point B, isn't it? Thus, you've got so many people on the move. What's going to happen? How are we going to deal with the overcrowding of some places?
Yeah, there's a huge increase in tourists. I think there's 1.2 billion that was recorded in 2015, people moving around, and now there's 4.3 billion predicted by 2050. So that's, you know, a huge increase. A lot of places have been feeling the increase, places such as Venice and Barcelona, where the locals have started to really notice it and start to push back on tourists. There's, I think, 70,000 people that go through Barcelona every day in tourist season. So it's interesting to see how different countries around the world, you know, the Philippines and Thailand. Thailand's actually just closed Maya Bay to two tourists to give the sea life a chance to live properly and, regenerate, because over two decades it was becoming quite destroyed and at the risk of becoming extinct. So I think it's a really interesting, places like Bali, that have one third of Australians have travelled to Bali, and they're looking at, creating 10 other islands that they can start redirecting tourists to instead of them all heading to Bali.
To that one spot, that's correct. Yeah, I remember reading not so long ago in Barcelona where there was a massive protest in the city because accommodation was becoming so expensive. The locals were becoming unable to afford to pay rent on the properties that were in the city because so many had gone to the likes of Airbnb. People who own places said, well, instead of renting somebody a flat for $300 a week, we can get $1,000 a week or even more via Airbnb. And the protest was quite massive.
And I suppose that's a great example of how businesses and companies that are in the tourism industry can take responsibility and make sure that there's a balance and that situation's not occurring, because you can imagine how locals would, that would frustrate locals.
Oh, yes. Indeed.
Huge influx of tourists.
I remember a member of my very own family a few years ago was holidaying in Italy. Thought, I think I'll go to Venice for a few days. And got to Venice, and they said, sorry, son, not for you. Off you go. There was nowhere for him to stay, so he was actually sent away. But it's not only, you hear stories about Amsterdam and other European cities where people can fly from the UK into Amsterdam and cities like that, sometimes for 10 quid. Go there for a weekend, stay with friends, and then fly home. So, the overcrowding is just, it's out of control, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and it's not only the environmental impacts, but also the social impacts, as we just touched on as well.
Yes.
I think people are waking up, and it's becoming more aware of the impact that they do have as tourists, as we see more in the media being discussed. And I think, you know, if people become aware, then they're going to shop at local. There's a statistic that the UNEP, $100 of every, $100 of tourism money, only $5 remains in the local economy. So that's a global statistic, and that really reflects, you know, when people travel, and with the rise of the cruise ship travel, having the money stay in multinational companies is not useful for local economies. So if people become more aware and they shop, you know, the local shops, then really support the local economy, I don't think there will be as much of a pushback.
Indeed. I think there was a story also recently about Bali where, you know, 1 million Australians go every year, but that is being surpassed by the Chinese travellers because the Chinese are absolutely on the move. There are, you know, millions of them travelling every year, and Bali is a hot spot there too. But once again, they're not leaving the dollars where they should be.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, tour operators that exist in one's country, and all the money's kind of held and then not spent in the local economy. So that's also a big problem.
Indeed. And look, I've been privy to being up in northern Queensland when a cruise ship arrived at Port Douglas a couple of years ago, and, you know, 2,500 people got off the ship and you couldn't move in Port Douglas. Even then, the restaurants weren't full, the bars weren't full. People were just sort of off the ship, wandering around the streets, and whether they were leaving any money in Port Douglas, I don't know. So we've talked about Amsterdam, Bali, Barcelona, Venice. Domestically, how are we doing? Is there any place in Australia which is currently you would call overcrowded?
So I think the spots in Australia, which you know, Sydney and Byron Bay is another one which experiences a lot of tourism, and I think that could be damaged by too many tourists also travelling there. The locals in Byron Bay have also noticed it, and there's been a lot of media around tourism to Byron Bay as well.
Well, of course, it's a beautiful spot, and I can understand why people want to go to Byron Bay, but is there a limit? Will it get to the point where the locals are saying, we want your dollar, but we don't want you hanging around for too long?
Yeah, it's interesting because about 24 countries in Europe and the UK have introduced taxes for tourists. So that the idea behind that is to improve the destination for locals, but also tourists when they come to visit. So I'm not sure whether Australia's got to that point yet. I know, you know, I go to Manly Beach with my family every January, and seeing the ferries come and on a daily basis, so many people come across and then back at night time, and you wonder whether in 10 years, 20 years' time, there'll be damage done to the natural environment in Manly, which is so amazing at the moment.
Yeah, look, I get to Manly every year too, I suppose, on my you know, annual trip to Sydney, or my biannual trip to Sydney, and I love that journey from Circular Quay out to Manly. But look, I do leave a few dollars there. There's always a lunch going on in a pub or a restaurant, and, you know, and I invariably get over there and forget that I've bought a hat. I should have taken a hat with me, so I'm invariably buying yet another hat from one of the shops there, and of course a few beers and lunch somewhere. So I do leave a few dollars there, but I imagine there'd be a lot of people who go there and just walk around and have a look and get on the ferry and go back.
Yeah, and I think it is the responsibility of the local councils, but also individuals that travel, to just be aware of that. I remember visiting Bali a few years ago and seeing Kuta for the first time, and just being, you know, horrified at the state of that place.
Yeah.
After, you know, it has all the Australians go over, and I think that's a really good example of how it can go so badly wrong.
There's always the inevitable go-to spot, isn't there? And I think I read just a while ago where Japan and South Korea are the go-to countries. So I imagine a massive influx into Japan, which is overpopulated anyway, and South Korea's got a huge population also. You know, suddenly finding you've got a few million people a year wanting to go there could make an enormous difference.
Definitely. So, hopefully we see that starting to happen. Another thing is, you know, our Aboriginal Australian people, they understand exactly what it means to respect the land. So
yes.
I think I was at an amazing conference yesterday, and there was an Aboriginal man doing a meditation, which was all about mindfulness and just being aware of where we are and our impact, the impact of our actions on our environment around us. And I think if we did feel more connected to the land, as Aboriginal people do, it would be very different, because we are part of it and we have a relationship with it. So I think it's all about just being mindful of our footprint wherever we travel. And, you know, great to see things like the plastic straw movement, and there's been protests against big coffee chains about how many cups they use and all the rest of it. And the reality is, you know, if we work in a big corporate or in our organisations, we can make that calculation and say, you know, why don't we just introduce having one cup and refill? Sure. And you know, those little things all make a difference.
Yeah, I'm very aware of the environment, and I'm a person who picks up litter at my train station every day. I pick up litter and I put it in the appropriate place, like the coffee cup sadly has to go into the rubbish bin. The plastic lid goes into the recycling bin. But you know, you've brought up the indigenous factor there, and even though I do pick up litter and I'm a water saver and I love the environment, I'm a bit of a tree hugger, but I just wish I had the mindset sometimes of our Indigenous brothers and sisters and their feel for the land. Sadly, I think us whiteys, we just don't get it, but I wish I got it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
But such is life. Steph Willard is the CEO and founder of Seven Women, who you heard her talk about just a short time ago at the beginning of our chat. Steph, can people support the group and learn more about it?
Definitely. So we've got the website, and we're always fundraising for our scholarship fund. So yes. Education is where it all begins, which we've realised very clearly. Education and then skills training and basically employment pathways for disabled and marginalised women. So always accepting donations to impact more women. There's over 5,500 women now that have come through our education, training and employment programs. So also, you know, if people are in Nepal and want to visit, we can easily organise a visit. And also I've got the tour company, Hands on Development, where we actually take people over to learn all about sustainable tourism and a lot of different global issues through visiting organisations that deal with the environment, human trafficking,
social entrepreneurship, all those sorts of things.
Some of these issues. So, people are very welcome to get involved, and there's a lot of different ways that they can participate.
And so they can just Google up Seven Women and the information will come up, is that correct?
Yep, sevenwomen.org is our website.
Terrific. Steph Willard is the CEO and the founder of Seven Women. Steph, it's been such fun having a chat with you and very enlightening too. Wish you well and have a great weekend.
Thanks a lot. You too.